Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 44 for June 11th, 2007. WWDC Deconstructed. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free book, visit audible.com/MacBreak Weekly. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 44, a very special edition, WWDC Deconstructed. And joining us now to talk about it, two people who were at the keynote. Andy was not at the keynote. So I take that.
I was not, believe it or not. I was, even though it took place early in the afternoon here in Boston, I was asleep until about an hour and a half ago. So
a man who slept through the keynote.
I woke up to a brand new world. It was cool. We're reading every single brain dump of the keynote all at once.
It's actually easier that way.
I felt like McCoy, you know, when he wore that special hat that allowed him to reattach Spock's brain. I just kept muttering for about 10 minutes. It was really cool.
He slurped the keynote moments ago. Andy Iannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times and via Harvard Square. Merlin Mann, also not at the keynote. This is going to be a very informed...
An expert.
I saw lots of white people typing about it in real time, so I feel like I was...
Perfect. Where were you?
Steve has now moved 7 inches to the left, and there's a song playing.
Where were you?
I just got back from your old stomping grounds of Providence, Rhode Island, the Providence area.
Oh, so you literally got back in.
I literally, last night, I have had so many bivalves and crustaceans that... I need to get new pants, but I'm back and I'm very excited to talk about these exciting developments.
Well, finally, somebody who actually was there, Scott Bourne of the AppleFoneShow.com. For some reason, he's talking like Marvin the Martian. Maybe I don't
My name is Marvin the Martian.
I don't know if that's his excitement level or what. Hello, Scott.
Hello.
And joining us in a few minutes, John Gruber, who is in a session right now, but will get out and will join us. And he was also at the keynote. But the truth is, you really can read it all, whether it's on Engadget. Where did you get your coverage from, Andy Iannacco? Where'd you choose to read up on it?
Basically through Apple Insider, Mac World, and Mac Central, which is actually an offshoot of Mac World. They have good live boards.
So you stuck with the Apple-centric media to find out what was going on.
Well, because you need a certain amount of granularity when you're trying to get stuff, when you're trying to experience a keynote in near real time, or in my case, on like 3 hour tape delay, you need to get people who are used to like typing really fast and not saying things like, "Wow, there's a mysterious bulge in his back pocket. I think it might be the tablet phone." Oh, wait a minute. No, it's just his microphone pack. Okay.
Never mind. I know.
I'm not sure what kind of frames he's wearing for glasses. It looks like, you know, it's like, yeah. Okay, thank you.
There's a little over analysis going on.
Yeah.
Well, Scott, you were there. I'll tell you what, I think probably the best way to kind of handle all this is just to go one by one through all the announcements. But before we do, Scott, overall, what was your sense of the keynote, the crowd, Steve's glasses, anything, any impressions you'd like to share with us?
Well, you know, it certainly wasn't as exciting as a Macworld type of thing. But for WWDC, I've only been to one other one. It seemed pretty jazzed, at least initially. And there was a lot of positive energy. There were several points at which the crowd erupted.
Yeah.
and the hands down best line of the keynote in terms of crowd reaction was when Steve says, "And it's shipping in October, and the basic version's 129." And then he paused, yeah. And then he said, "And the professional version's 129, and the enhanced version's 129." And he was running through this thing to make fun of all the versions of Vista, and you couldn't even hear him because the crowd had just drowned him out with applause and laughter. So that was the big moment.
That's neat.
The crowd was underwhelmed by the iPhone via Safari announcement because several other times when he would announce things, they clapped. And when he announced that, there was a guy sitting next to me who was a web developer who said, "Yoo-hoo," real loud. But other than that, it wasn't – I mean, nobody booed, but nobody went nuts.
We'll
so maybe that.
That
was – maybe that was what they were looking for.
We'll get to that in a second. I think that was the thing the developers in the audience were most anxious to hear, whether third-party apps would be supported on the iPhone. I might disagree with you a little bit. Not, I wasn't there, but I have to say, to me, the Mac world talk really was not anything hugely substantive. It was just like, oh, cool new things that are coming. This at least gave us some insight into some details into what Leopard was doing.
Okay, well, given that January was the iPhone keynote, that got people again. That really talking about having to replace your pants afterwards. That was pretty good.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I think that I don't know. I wanted more substance. I want to know what's going to happen on the desktop.
True.
And I think that in a way, I'm more interested in what's happening with Leopard than I am with the iPhone. Let's go through it from beginning to end. They kicked off with it's what sounded like a pretty funny. I was listening on Ustream, so I wasn't able to see anything, but it sounded like a pretty funny little ad featuring John Hodgman, the I'm a PC guy, dressed as Steve Jobs in a black turtleneck and jeans. It just shows how much body type has to do with making that look work.
Black is slimming, and it hides food stains. It's the perfect geek wear.
He comes out and says, "Hello, everyone, I'm Steve Jobs," which, of course, gets a laugh. "I've got some big news this year. I want the whole world to hear. I quit. Yes, that's right. I'm resigning, effective immediately, and shutting down all of Apple. I didn't have a choice," he says. "Vista is performing so well, it sold tens of dozens of copies. Leopard was going to get lost in all that. Wow. And I've got my iPod killer, a brown Zune. It's time for Apple to wave the white flag. Don't shed tears. Just take those big brains out of the mascarpone center." Which I like. Anyway, and he's capitulate to a Redmond, obviously a joke. Was that funny, Scott?
I thought it was very. He got a very good reaction.
Seems like it went over well.
Steve came out right away, which then the big applause.
Right, everybody's happy to see Steve, not in a black turtleneck, by the way. Mm. He was in a red shirt of some kind, or red turtleneck, maybe that is. Oh well, slightly different.
Are we turning into the E Channel, like red carpet coverage? The shoes are by Tiffany with American buckles.
I was waiting for a old kind of has-been comic with much plastic surgery and her daughter to give us the fashion.
Oh,
rundown.
My God. He's wearing a red turtleneck.
Greg Joswiak, who are you wearing? Greg, turn to the left.
So he says the biggest WWDC ever. WWDC is for developers, Worldwide Developer Conference. In fact, journalists really don't get to go in. As I remember, at least the last few, you could go to the keynote, but that's it. You had to go home.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reason why I've yet to go to a WWDC, because they really, or at least the last time I looked into it, they are really a bit twitchy about when you're wearing your journalist hat and when you're wearing your developer's hat. I do have developer status, but it would be an itchy experience if I were sitting in on some sessions.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm here in Boston with another $800 in my pocket.
Paul Otellini comes on stage from Intel, this time not wearing a bunny suit, although they very kindly showed the video of him wearing a bunny suit, which is kind of humiliating.
Mom, it was a Batman costume. I was 5 years old. Stop showing it at parties.
It's just a pro forma thank you and a polished steel commemorative disc. I don't know what that is for, but Apple's happy about Intel, and Intel's happy about Apple, and they ought to be, I think. Big announcement. First big announcement, EA is going to do some games for the Mac. Does that make a big difference, Andy Anako?
I'm not sure. I mean, I really think that's a ship that's long since sailed. I don't think that Mac can really get back the gaming community until somebody makes an absolutely killer must-have game that's Macintosh exclusive first. If they said that, by the way, next version of John Madden is going to be Mac only for 1 month earlier than it's going to be available every
happen.
Other publish,
yeah.
It will never happen, but that'd be the kick of the pants that game development needs on the Mac. I mean, right now, I can't tell you how many, as I was going through hitting that part of the keynote, I was wondering, gee, how many keynotes have I sat through that had a big, you know, ambitious thing? Oh, and and gaming is finally coming to the Macintosh now that this game is signed up. Now that this developer community has signed up, now that we've assigned, you know, now that we're supporting this toolkit. So this is one of the few areas in which when Apple makes an announcement, you're like, that's nice, boys. Let's see what actually ships in a year.
Yeah.
Whereas everything else, you're like, oh, wow, iPhone. Oh, wow, Leopard. Oh, wow.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, isn't that one benefit of PCs, though, is the idea that the stuff really is getting a lot cheaper and a lot faster.
And games actually come out on it.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, just in the sense that if you are somebody who really wants the most cutting edge of this stuff, it's just a hell of a lot cheaper to do on a PC. You're not going to be able to see that stuff getting updated that quickly and getting faster that quickly on a Mac, right? I mean, you can't trick it out.
It's not just the games. It's the fact that you can roll your own just killer, like Soviet ICBM of gaming on Windows, where you get your own car and you get your own, you upgrade your bus and you just all these tweaks to make the to make sure you can kill the as many fake people from across the globe as possible. Whereas with the Macintosh, you're essentially getting what you get. Maybe you can put in a slightly better video card, but your hardware tweaks are not really available. And I think that's what's going to continue to keep away the really hardcore gamers. You know, the people with like the half inch thick calluses on their right. shooting fingers.
Although I you know, bringing in trooping out John Carmack and id to say they're developing a game for, well, you see, that's the problem, for Mac, PC, PS3 and Xbox.
Yeah. It really is more significant, not so much as, hey, now gamers are going to be coming to the Mac, so much as the machine they used to goof off on at work, they can now goof off on at home. So they can play Madden on their real machine, so to speak, for gaming, but they can also, when they're on their MacBook or when they're on their little word processing iMac, they can use it at home too. Again, I just really don't see gaming in that scale happening on the Mac anytime soon.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it makes sense. The first announcement you make is the least important, right? I mean, in order of importance, it's...
It looked like it had some pretty cool eye candy to it, though.
Yeah, I'm looking at the pictures on Engadget. There's no video, as far as I know, up, but I'm sure Apple put it up eventually. But it looks pretty.
Did you ever see The Sting, Leo?
The Sting with the...
Yeah, the George Roy
Paul,
Hill movie. Paul Newman. There's that
Redford.
Great scene, though, where they're gonna. I think they called it a wire back then, but when they had to, they would basically relay a game by somebody would read it over the teletype,
yes.
and then they would like reenact it with like
3 seconds later.
Horse race, right?
It's given what a sophisticated age we live in, that's really what this feels like to me sometimes.
Okay, 3 seconds later.
I mean, you could maybe Comedy Central could do something where they'd have people like ad-libbing, like kind of acting it out on stage in real time,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, it does.
Actually, I think that, no, you just gave me an idea. This is how the Mac community or Apple could really finally embrace developers, the game community. iChat has this really wonderful like screen mirroring feature. So basically, all they have to do is buy like a million Dells, keep them in Apple, and basically allow anybody to just launch iChat and play any game they want for Windows via mirroring.
There you go.
Now, there'd be about an 8-second latency, which might make sure your game's kind of
sad. It's not the funnest thing in the world. I think we should do next year, Mac Break Weekly, let's do a reenactment of the keynote.
Oh, that's a great idea.
We can have cheesy slides. I'll dress up in a turtleneck.
And I play John Hodgman.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Okay. I want to be the guy in the front beard, front row with a neck beard, who's really excited about everything.
Everything you'll just jump up and go, woohoo!
That describes almost everybody in the front row,
Merlin. They all work for Apple.
The strategic CEO who comes on without a clue and drones on for 8 minutes about infrastructure.
You can be
only if you bring note cards.
3x5 guard man, we'll call
every
you.
Every time I clap, there's going to be a cloud of Cheetos dust.
A little poof of orange dust that comes up from
it's
the front row.
It's announcement ever.
All right, so moving along, he gets to Leopard. Now, I have to say, I was impressed by the Leopard announcements. Well, first of all, he says, and I think this is actually significant, that 66% of all the Mac users are running Tiger, which is pretty good uptake. You couldn't say that for Windows by any means. I mean, I think there's still a lot of Windows 95 users out there.
Didn't Microsoft have to officially like announce, dudes, we are withdrawing support for Windows 2000. Please stop using it. It's using 8 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
Get out of the building. We're knocking it down tomorrow.
Apple fans seem to upgrade, and I think they will upgrade to Leopard. Leopard's significantly improved, it looks like. 22 million active OS X users. Does that seem like a surprisingly large number?
22 million?
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's what Jobs says. Pretty amazing. 15 million of them using Tiger, 5 million Panther, and only 2 million are using something older than Panther.
That seems extraordinarily high to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, would he lie?
Well,
he wouldn't lie.
He doesn't lie. He just speaks.
He might
fudge.
And then
the distortion field is what causes all of us to hear it.
He said 5 million, but it came out 15. Maybe that's it.
He might have Michael Moore'd the numbers a little bit, where there's sort of a truth, but you got to really dig with both hands to find it.
It's gonna be. I don't know. I'd like to find out. Let's find out. I don't know where that number comes from. He didn't say we should find out. 300. Speaking of big numbers, 300 new features in Leopard. He showed 10 of them, and some of them were ones we had not seen before, including, he says, a new desktop. Didn't look that different. It looked like the old desktop with a new desktop picture.
It lost the chrome look, and you get to use your own picture. And I don't think there's that big a difference from what I can tell.
I do like the new features. I think the stack is kind of interesting.
Yeah, but I mean, it's really not like a complete remake of the desktop. I think it's short on depth and kind of high on pretty.
Merlin, did you look at the pictures? Are these things you can do with third-party apps now?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, boy, this should just become my standard proviso on this stuff. You know, that you really can't tell just by looking at a still photo somebody took with their phone to decide whether this is going to be great. But I did watch like a total dork, I went to the apple.com/Mac and watched the little demo several times. And it looks really cool. To answer your question specifically, it looks on the face of it to me like new ways to kind of present and browse information.
Right.
I'm not sure that it's really functionally different, and I really doubt that it's heavily rewritten. I mean, it struck me as a nice way to leverage what they're doing with graphics right now in a way that's really exciting to look at. But to your question, I mean, you're a Pathfinder man, aren't you?
Yeah, I use Pathfinder.
Are you a Pathfinder guy, Andy?
No.
Okay, it amazes me. Craig Severson is a. It seems like every time I turn around, I see somebody else using Pathfinder, because a lot of us are very frustrated with how we get from A to B. You know, even with Quicksilver in place,
people are unhappy with the Finder. In fact, one of our Mac wines, you said, I don't like the Finder.
Yeah, you know, I got to say that one's kind of getting gray around the edges. I should really go back and kind of articulate what that is and quit being such a dork about it. But it is frustrating to me that it's a file management system that the way that it's really conceptualized from the bottom up hasn't evolved much over the years.
Well, my problem with the doc was it really was so sparse, and you couldn't really put much in there. And I think Stacks in a way makes that doc much more functional.
Yeah.
Go
ahead. Sorry.
No. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that, believe it or not, when I was reviewing Windows Vista, that was one of the features that I wrote about, saying, gee, I really wish that Apple would steal that feature for the next version of macOS, because I like to be able to zap directly. I'm not really, my allegiance is not to individual applications that are running,
but Windows.
To individual projects that I'm using.
Or so projects, okay.
The ability to zap right to the document that I'm working on is a really big deal. And also, there's nothing wrong with making things look and work pretty, because that's actually a feature. So, I mean, if they spend a certain amount of their time making things look better, animate better, look a little bit slicker, be a little easier to use, that's fine.
My only slight response to that is that they making things look pretty is a problem that they are extremely good at solving. And so I think that given that that's their hammer, they tend to seek a lot of nails. And that's why something that can be, you know, in our famous MacBreak demo, Leo, that I think frustrated my friends over at CocoTech a little bit with how we blew out what you can do with Pathfinder in the dorkiest of conceivable ways. It's not, you know, it is a pretty app, but it's a super functional app. Maybe it's bloated.
It's not a pretty app. It's not a pretty app.
It's not pretty about functional.
Right.
Yeah, it's not pretty.
It's pretty in the BB edit sense. It's about a tool.
But I mean, what I need to do, I need the shortest distance possible. This is a term that I started using a lot with my friends on the OmniFocus team. Is to shorten the distance between cognition and completion. So whatever I do on the Mac, I increasingly want to find the shortest path I can take between occurring to me and then either getting it done or making a placeholder. And that goes for the Finder too. So for me, like seeing, you know, graphically seeing a large icon for the contents of a text file, well, for me, that's cool. But, you know, what I really need is a way for me to never have to do things twice. I don't spend a lot of time flipping through anything on a Mac, except photos, really. And I guess iTunes.
Merlin, I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought you were done. Can I ask you a question, though?
Yes.
Why did you not ask me if I use Pathfinder?
You're not the Pathfinder type.
I'm gonna be honest with you, Scott. I would never in a million years imagine you being a Pathfinder guy.
You're just very intuitive that way, aren't you?
Tell me, are you a Pathfinder guy?
I don't even know what it is.
I knew it.
Okay, you got me, Bourne. That was funny.
We know you too well, Scott. No, but Scott actually is more like the prototypical Mac user who uses Safari, uses Finder. Uses Mail, is not seeking out third-party applications. They trust Apple to do it, and they stick with the kind of the uniformity that the Apple interface gives you.
Well said, friend.
And it's a system. And it's a system. Let's be honest. It's a system you can trust. If you come in, especially, I see people coming over from Windows. You know, probably a couple times.
Yeah, they say, "Where's the apps?" Yeah, where's?
They come. Well, a lot of them come over and they're thrilled. They just go, and then I take this and I drag it to there, and I'm very happy. And then I clean this up and I change this photo, and they're like, they're happy. They're like kindergartners, just having fun with like the stock tools, and it's awesome to watch. It's just that, like I say, I mean, once you, I don't know. I don't know if it's a key thing. I don't know what it is. It might be an ADD thing, but it's kind of long story short. I had to use this to really see what it looks like. But I think about things again. Like, I always come back to stuff like the drop stack in Pathfinder. You know, I look at
stuff, I wish we
like,
had something like that. That's, to me, the single most powerful tool in Pathfinder.
Look at all of these aftermarket hacks that people have. Things like, oh, what's that drawer program that flies out from the side that everybody uses?
Well, that's what I was thinking with stacks. That's kind of what this is like. Is
Yojimbo? Yeah,
not Yojimbo. Pathfinder or what is
it? Oh, sorry,
Drag thing.
Drag thing. That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, but stuff like that, you just look at the way that, like, God, you can always tell what people want to turn the Finder into by what they're using to compensate.
Well, and that's why I think this may get them there. I think this and the previews everywhere, this new using CoverFlow, I'm not a fan of CoverFlow, frankly. I don't use it very much on iTunes. I'm not sure this is the best metaphor, but they're going to use CoverFlow for the ability to preview all these docs. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, first of all, just to close off on an earlier subject, one of the reasons why I've never really gotten into Pathfinder and other little apps like that is that I like the simplicity of the dock. I hated the dock when I first saw it. I double hated it the first time I used it. But when I realized that, wait a minute, this is just a very cool, very simple, very general tool that I can then customize just by exploiting built-in features. Just the idea that I can just drag my apps folder into the dock, it'll become hierarchical just by the virtue of the fact that there are things inside the folder, inside the dock, allowed me to get an extra level of sophistication. I like these third-party tools. I certainly like Quicksilver and the rest. I just hope that it doesn't cause people to continue to hate something that's really, really good because it didn't click with them the first 5 seconds. They didn't give it like at least a full day.
You know, you're right. I mean, one thing I think about is I probably don't leverage the dock as much as I could for stuff. I mean, you can do stuff like, I presume you could do things like throw smart folders down there, things that I don't do. I don't know enough. If I were you and I had the AppleScript skills, I would probably be making a million awesome folder actions. That's the one thing I always wish I'd learn more about, because you can do so much with folder actions alone, let alone, you know, getting into Automator and stuff like that. So, you know, your point's well taken. But everything that they make, you kind of want to just hold it in your hand and see what it looks like and see how you use it. I don't know.
I agree. I think when I look at this, I think this, we won't know till we get it. But I think this is very promising looking.
What I like about it is that they didn't reinvent. A lot of people are saying they reinvented the dock. What I like about it is that they kept the simplicity of it. They didn't screw it up for people who just like it as an application launcher. Just add a little extra depth to it, and I'm good.
You know what I'll bet it does do is you know, I mean, I maybe you and I disagreed a little on this, Leo, but I thought those iPhone ads were just freaking great. And you know, between iPhone and
I don't disagree. I thought they were great. I just think that they were deceptive.
Oh, and that there's other. Yeah, no, you're right. Okay, but so if you were going to go out there and try to woo people, you know, I mean, having stuff like that CoverFlow thing, that is pretty sharp in terms of the whole like over the shoulder factor.
It ain't nothing like that in Vista. I can tell you right now.
Not without buying three more computers and coming up with some kind of you know
having a render farm.
Well, a render farm.
What's those six notebooks that you for? Oh, they're just rendering page previews. Don't pay it no mind.
And he did point that out because of core direct audio, core animation, all of this built-in support in the operating system. Things like CoverFlow are much easier to implement than they would be on any other operating system.
Yeah, I'm really keen to get my next copy of the developer build because I really want to see how well CoverFlow works. It's actually very, very close to the way that I tend to interact with my own data. I love Spotlight. I love its ability to search things for me, which were faster, but hey, what do you want to do? But so much of what I do isn't simply doing a search for something or using keywords. It's saying, well, that kind of looks like the document I'm looking for. Oh, I remember I put it sort of somewhat there. So many times I have to process lots of data that I haven't touched in about a month. I don't know what's in that folder until I actually paw through it. So the ability to get all these really sophisticated previews of what's actually in the document very, very quickly is really, really attractive. Now, the downside will be if it doesn't work as well as it works in the demo. It has to be absolutely liquid. One of the reasons why I don't use Spotlight much anymore on my PowerPC-based notebook is because, my God, I'll pop it up and it'll take like 8 seconds. And 8 seconds isn't a lot of time, but it still is too much time for me to lay my hands on
a
document.
You want to find it right away. Yeah,
exactly. It's not transparent. It doesn't become invisible to, kind of like what Merlin was saying. Right. It doesn't become invisible to the thing that I want to do. So,
you know, I got a bug here. If you're running a Mac Pro and you click on Spotlight, you should be able to like immediately hit enter to have it go to show all and open in a window. You should never have to sit there and wait. You know what I'm talking about? Where it's got to sit there.
Yeah, you have to search for something.
Well, of course, it's got to find something before it will let you pop into that mystery meat window that
I
load.
Crazy.
But that's what I want to go back to what I'm doing, but I can't go back to what I'm doing.
I disable Spotlight on all my machines because I just don't find it functional enough.
Me too.
Can I open one very informative rat hole just very quickly?
Sure.
I'm curious. You're in the Finder. How do you, generally speaking, view your windows? Command 1. You view as icons. Command 2, you view as a list. Command 3, you view in columns.
I do columns because I do what Steve does. How about you, Andy? Yeah. Are you a column guy, icon view, or list view?
It really sounds like a
personality
newlywed game question. No, it sounds like a newlywed game question. Couple number 2. What part of you did your husband say you normally used? Anyway.
I'm guessing, Andy, you make Whoopi in Command 3, column view is my guess.
If you're going to use it, use the make Whoopi. I switch between list view and column view. I actually tend to spend more time in list view because I spend most of my time needing to sort based on what my most recent deposit into this folder was, or I need to see, oh, wait a minute, that's the 400K JPEG I drew from this, not the 10 megabyte original RAW file. Right. As a matter of fact, I use column view I use column view in cover flow mode, really. It's the way I need to walk through a directory structure and I need to get previews. So that's why
isn't
I'm really
icon
keen on
view the default, ironically?
Yes.
I think it is.
It's the worst of the three, the least useful of the three.
It's very nostalgic, I think, yeah.
Well, and you know, the column view comes from Next and Next Step. And I think that my sense was this, as I remember when he first introduced it, this is the way Steve wants it to be. When in Next Step, you didn't have, you know, this is really the way it was. And I think that the other two are concessions that Steve's made to usability. Yeah. I think he really thinks, and I kind of agree with him, column view is the most functional.
One of my favorite downloads ever for the classic Mac was Greg's Browser, which was an implementation of the Next Style browser on the Mac OS. And I used it as a Finder replacement because it was just so useful.
I remember Steve, the first time we saw OS X, saying, you know, this is going to take some getting used to, but I think once you use it for a while, you'll see how useful it is. And there are definitely flaws. I mean, stuff tends to go off onto the right, you know, unless you have a very wide screen. The columns are never wide enough. You can't see dates and you can't see file sizes, as Andy points out.
Pathfinder really specializes in column view. I'm curious to hear what Scott uses. I tend to do column view, or excuse me, list view, but I'm working my way into column view. One nice thing, Andy, just for what it's worth, I believe Pathfinder will let you, first of all, it remembers how wide you want a given window to be in column view.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And second, you can also sort by date in column view, which
I'll definitely give it another try. I mean, believe it or not, I don't even have Quicksilver running on most of my Macs as much as I love it. Here's the reason why, because it'll say, well, I'm not going to launch anymore because there's a new version available. So I'm not going to even launch. And I'm saying, okay, well, fine. I'll drop everything, including the column that's due in 45 minutes. So I can download and install a brand new version of your app just so I could launch a file that I could use, that I could launch just as easily, not just as easily, but just as well from any other app. And then I wind up not reinstalling it. That's the most annoying. And that's something that happens in so many different apps. I know there's a new version. The old version is working fine for me temporarily until it will cause like a brain toad to land on my computer and cause doom and destruction. Please don't stop working arbitrarily.
In the interest of Alcor's sake, I'm going to point out that you can't have it automatically install the updates without asking, and that's what I have it do.
One click.
And just one click. And then you don't even
see it. One click is too many.
Damn it. It doesn't even ask me. Check for updates weekly. Install updates without asking. It just does it. Download updates in the background, install updates. It's in the preferences. But okay. I understand what you're saying, and for a while, there seemed like there was an update of the day on Quicksilver. I don't know what was going on there.
Isn't that one of the biggest problems, not just in the
every
Mac
program
field,
does every, it's very well, frustrating.
I'm not just what I was talking about, but something brand new, that the idea that, you know, if you disconnect me early on, I'll just forget that you exist.
Right.
And you fix it, you made it much, much better. It's not that I'm on principle not using your app. It's just that I've forgotten about you, and I need someone like you guys to say, oh, by the way, this doesn't work that way anymore. You should check it out again.
Yeah. I have to say that I don't use the Finder that much because of Quicksilver. I use column mode, but I don't need column mode all that much. I rarely dig into my folders.
Yeah.
Does this really work well for file management for you, though?
Well, I just open the doc I want.
I'm talking about moving folders. I'm talking about setting up directories. I'm talking about setting up small something as cool as smart folders.
Well, that's that old debate about whether you should enforce hierarchy or just do a flat file and use the search tools like Quicksilver to find what you want. And I don't do much hierarchy anymore. I think hierarchy is so, 1999.
That's what makes it to me so handy is you having stuff like being able to take a good idea, like having that little sidebar in the Finder and being able to just take that to another level. So on Pathfinder, I feel like I'm always pimping Pathfinder, but the ability to have multiples of your sidebar. For example, I've got one called troubleshooting where I can open up a sidebar that's got links to all my troublesome library folders, my preferences, and all the applications that I'd like to use when I'm troubleshooting something. So I don't have to go have that, go invent the wheel every time I want to go do that. Also, just all the little ways of doing things like being able to create a text file or RTF right from the Finder. It sounds kind of dumb, but you end up using it all the time. And, having a terminal built in, I know it's crafty for some people, but if you just need to do one really quick thing, it can be super fast.
Let's move on. We've got a lot to talk about.
What about Scott? We didn't find out Scott's
preference. Scott, what do you use?
List view.
Sort of by date or name.
I based on actually a recommendation from one Merlin man, I sort by date because it solves my problems. Because then I can find the things I most recently added.
Okay, I'm done with that. Now, next week, the rat hole will be I will ask you how you sort your mail.
I think it's a great question, actually. I'm very interested in I'm glad we talked about that.
When I watch people really fly with column mode, it makes me think that I really want to start using it more.
Yeah, you keep having to renew your knowledge.
Well, we'll have all of those plus CoverFlow. That's one change. He said a new Finder, but it doesn't seem like it's that different.
That's crazy.
It's a new sidebar. What's new in the sidebar? Now you can search for over the net. I was unclear on this. A much nicer and more powerful. Now you can search other Macs and servers within the Finder. You've always been able to share files. It's now really easy to browse and share files with computers on your network.
If that really works, that's going to be badass.
Back to my Mac thing.
Yeah, back to my Mac. I'll give you $129 just for that feature alone.
What does this do, Andy? What does it do?
Basically, what it does is it remembers, if you have home broadband or any other, if you don't pay for a static IP address, it's impossible to be in a hotel room in Delaware and access your Mac back in Boston by file sharing. If you have a .Mac account, .Mac will essentially remember whatever your IP address of your home Mac is. It'll remember it. So
it's dynamic DNS through the .Mac, basically.
Oh, you sound so sexy when you use the technical jargon. basically, it's almost like a DNS service for your local Mac. Right. It'll find it's like what the Slingbox does. You don't have to care where it is; it'll find it for you. That is awesome.
And it'll show up as a shared folder, and you can get any file out of it. You can't. It's not remote access. It's just shared folder.
No,
file sharing.
Will you be able to use the .mail that way, Andy?
It's new. I've only talked to one person about this feature, and things were a little bit sketchy. Basically, if you think about anything that you could do with a static IP address on your home Mac, you could do it with Back to My Mac, technically. That's the information I'm getting, although, again, that's
it's encrypted.
You can SSH in?
Yeah, it says it's encrypted, so it's already an encrypted tunnel. I don't know.
You can SSH in. That's pretty badass.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, that would. Now you're, like, playing ball with the big kid.
Then you have basically giving you a terminal session.
Also think about what it could do if it allows you to use internet sharing from your home Macintosh, so you can get all the devices that are on your network anywhere in the world and it's secure. That would be double frosted, chocolatey goodness, nougat filled badass.
And it brings us into that next feature, which it appears, again, I've watched this demo, that's all I've seen, but it appears that they're saying you can finally use Spotlight to search other Macs on your network. Or what it says, the way they said it was, I think they said you can search other computers.
Yes.
So in the demo, didn't he pull up a Windows machine too?
I think so, but I got to tell you, I kind of slept through that part.
Because here's my thing.
So did I, Scott.
It says, here's even a Windows machine up in the attic. I can even go on Windows machines.
It doesn't even have to be plugged in. No network card or anything. You'll find it.
Look, that's I found it in the attic.
Since I don't use
you have 89 cents in your pockets and two Canadian quarters. Spotlight knows all.
Since I don't use Spotlight, I didn't really pay that much attention. I apologize.
No, but that is that would be a nice feature. I think I would use Spotlight more if it were faster and more functional. So.
And here's my thing. If it can go search my RAID, I mean, when I search, so for me, I've got my stupid iTunes libraries.
Excellent.
You know what I mean? Like where you go and search, finds it on everything. That would be awesome.
That would be great. That would be great. You know, and I think, frankly, Apple needs reasons for people to buy .Mac. It's not, a great deal right now. So it's one more thing, one more reason. Let's see what else. That's it for a new feel for the new Finder in Leopard. Easily share other computers, cover flow built in. Quick look. I think this is something that is very powerful.
That was cool. That got a lot of, I actually heard people gasp when he showed that.
Well, that's going overboard.
Well, you know, they're geeks. Well, what can I say?
Oh my God, I can see a thumbnail. So the idea is previews of all the popular file types, which they didn't list, of course.
But you don't, it's really cool because you don't have to open the app. And I think that actually goes to some of the things Andy was saying. Andy doesn't care what application he's in. Andy cares.
So Merlin, shall I or would you like to?
What?
Say that this is in Pathfinder.
Oh, yeah. I didn't want to be a...
it's in Pathfinder. This exact feature is in Pathfinder, by the way.
Yeah. It's and you can watch a movie, you can listen to an MP3, you can,
It's actually, the truth is, the reason it's in Pathfinder is it's built into the Mac, and I mean, this is kind of the kind
also,
of...
Like, how hard is it to open preview?
Right.
Well, see, the thing, okay, now, I unfortunately, everyone put pity upon me because around 9 weeks ago, I switched to Leopard, the developer version, as practical as possible, my 100% full-time OS. And
and that's why you had to reboot before we could do the show.
Shut up. again, I've announced at the top that I want pity. I'm not one of these strong people who doesn't want to be pitied. Please pity me.
I need
canned goods,
pity.
Used clothing in good condition. Send them to Leo. Me care of Twit. No, that's fine. I'll
pass them along.
But how hard is it to launch preview? Not very, but not having to launch anything at all, that's even easier.
Yeah, I think it's a nice feature.
When I'm looking through a folder of photos, I'm playing media, I'm looking at movies. So off, I was actually just the other week. I was watching a Klaus Nomi documentary, and I was 10 minutes into it before I realized, oh wait a minute, I should be launching iTunes for this. But I've been just sitting back and watching it in Quick Look, and it's that slick and that useful. So
how do you get to Quick Look? Is it part of the Finder? What happens? I don't understand.
It's a right click.
Yeah, exactly. It's a quick click.
So you right click on a file, and there's a Quick Look as one of the things, and you can just look at it.
Exactly.
Not modify it, but you can watch a movie.
It actually launches a very, very slick looking viewer interface.
Kind of a browser.
It looks a lot like not a browser. It looks a lot like Aperture, where you can full screen it. You can.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it doesn't look like you're just checking out something in the Finder. I've just quick looked at a picture I took 2 weeks ago, and I'm seeing a large version of the preview. I'm seeing all the technical data that came with it. If I click this really cool, slick, translucent full screen button, it does away with the entire interface. I'm just looking at it at a very, very high detail, at which point I can add it to iPhoto. I can flip if I've selected more than one photo, I can page through it like a slideshow. It makes it very easy to forget that you're still in the Finder. It makes it feel like just a basic service that's available to everything. So it's definitely one of those things where I had no idea how much I'd use it until I was forced to use it, until it was available all the time, rather.
Yeah, it seems like a very useful thing, and actually a little more smoothly integrated than the Pathfinder preview. So there you go. 64-bit from top to bottom, including a 64-bit Cocoa layer. This is where
Don't tell me that people oohed over 64-bit.
I don't have
to think they're pumping something.
You know what
the
they oohed system. Over is when he loaded that picture really fast, right?
True.
Yeah, that was cool. But, the people around me anyway, that wasn't something they paid that much attention to. They were still buzzing about the quick look thing.
Oh, interesting. Well, and rightly so, because the only reason this demo makes any sense is because it was a 4 GB photo. I mean, the real gain in 64-bit is that you can access a lot of RAM. I mean, it doesn't make things faster in and of itself. So there's a little disingenuous of Steve to say, look how fast this photo loads. Yeah, it loads faster there because it's 4 GB.
Well, I put it to you this way, Leo. Is 64 not a larger number than 32?
Yes. Twice as
there
big.
There you go. We've just justified its existence.
Yeah.
I will tell you, one guy sitting next to me said, well, they'll really get my attention when it's 128.
130, they've got my money. 133.
Yeah. Well, it does give them bragging rights. I mean, Windows is still 32-bit. There's a 64-bit, but nobody uses it.
I so don't want to drink with those people.
If they're buying, I'll drink with anybody. I'll drink with Stalin if he's buying.
$120.
God, that's what a dull thing to be.
I think that was a joke. I think that was a good joke.
Oh, in that case,
don't you think? I think that's a funny joke. He'll get my attention when it's 128. To me, that's more like it.
Yawn.
If he was serious, then I think you're right.
Let's be charitable and say he was joking.
I don't know. He had one of those neck beards, so I wasn't sure how to take him.
Was it a clip on?
It's got a clip on.
You can tell
he
was laughing because barbecue potato chips were falling out of his neck beard.
Just save that for later.
I've amused myself again.
Now, I didn't see this, but it looks like it was a pretty cool demo. They showed the Apple TV interface.
My God.
This is using
cool.
Core Animation and showing how. So they have in the Apple TV startup window, they have all these little movies, you know, thumbnails, you know, thousands running.
And they're all playing at the same time.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Definitely catering to like the 12 and 13 year old market. They're just nothing lasts more than 1.8 seconds.
I'll be impressed when it's a 300x400 grid.
Who has time to watch an 8-second preview? Come on.
Now, actually, what I thought would be cool is like in this world of ADD dominated podcast hosts, you could literally watch hundreds of QuickTime videos all at once.
Merlin. You watch a whole season of The Wire at once. Yeah. It'd be like a situation for entertainment.
All right. And it'll make just about as much sense.
Anybody want to say anything
watch that
more about Core Animation? It's just basically built-in animation. I don't know. What does it do?
It basically allows you to take any application you're working on and with one day's more effort, make it exponentially more awesome.
Right.
I love Core Animation.
Yeah. But again, this is really what's the strength of OS X. I don't know how much developers use it, but things like Quartz, Core Audio, Core Animation, these things are very, very powerful. WebKit.
Well, one thing to remember about all these things like Core Animation and Core Audio is that it is going to change a little bit the way people develop apps. For instance, with Aperture, because of so many things being tied to the OS, they kind of have to wait for OS updates to upgrade the program. So that is one thing to keep in mind.
And it won't run on Windows either, which probably is a lot of the reason why they do this. Yeah. Now, I'm looking here, and I'm seeing Solitaire on the screen and Minesweeper. I can only think one thing. He's got Windows running.
He was showing the boot camp thing.
Oh, all right. That makes
sense. And he picked the lamest Windows apps he could find to demonstrate.
Look, we could do Office. Solitaire. Worse, Minesweeper. So this is going to be built in. It'll be free. No more CD burning for the drivers. The drivers are built in. That's nice. I noticed he did give a plug for both Parallels and VMware, though, so they're not going away, nor are they going to be subsumed into Leopard.
Now, Scott, was the demo was he showing Parallels or was he showing Bootcamp?
You know, it looked like Bootcamp to me. Of course, you know, I'm pure blood, so I couldn't.
No,
tell
no,
you.
It was. I'll tell you, it was Parallels because
there's a dock at the bottom.
That would be awesome.
Well,
you know, Parallels lets you run your Bootcamp partition as a Parallels window, so you can install into Bootcamp and then install Parallels on OS X, and you'll have the choice without another install of Windows. I think that's a very nice feature of Parallels.
Yeah, that's very The Matrix. I'm doing a virtualization of a virtualization now.
Oh, man, coherence mode in Parallels. Talk about Matrix. And now with this new Parallels 3 where you can choose which operating system you want to open a document in. I mean, that's just awesome. There really is no – I can't see any reason to buy a Windows machine at this point. I mean, you get a great Windows machine when you buy a Mac.
Yeah.
Careful.
Careful there. Hey, it's Mac Break Weekly. No Windows people listen to this.
Okay.
I'm not going to ruin my rep.
And there'll be no Windows Weekly podcast this week.
Yeah, no kidding.
They lost their audio drivers about 2 days ago. Don't worry about it. They don't listen to anything.
Yeah, he showed coherence, which is kind of neat. Okay, Spaces. We've seen this before. Nothing new. It's the same Spaces. Any new announcements? No, it's the same Spaces he showed a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, all you guys are smarter than me. I just, you know, I didn't see anything to be terribly excited about by that.
I could never get my head around, you know, this is another one of the things, what do they call it, Virtue Desktop?
Virtual Desktop,
or whatever.
Yeah. And I actually, there's a number of them for the Mac that work pretty
I'd like
well.
To watch some, I'm gonna do my Matlock now, Scott Bourne. Since y'all are out there a lot smarter than me, I would like to watch some really smart power users of this use it, because I tried it when it was the open source version of this, and I was pulling my hair out after like 3 minutes. That iTunes only lives in this one view that's two
weird.
Screens.
Yeah.
I could see it being handy if you totally work in modes, but unless you can have two, I don't know what the word is, instantiations of that application, or you know what I mean? It would make me, which I guess defeats the purpose.
It came from the Linux world, and it's just
screen. It's like running screen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oddly enough, I think it works. Now, you think that it'd be of best value for people who have like MacBooks with small screens. In my use of it, I really think it works best if you have a big cinema display, because it's just as you say, if you're in a mode of work where let's say I'm an Aperture and I'm editing photos, but I also need to click into Photoshop to do some more serious editing. Plus, I've got this new HDR tool that I'm using for other things. If you can have every window in that space open and available with one click, it's a very useful thing. As a way of burrowing through 64 windows on a small desktop, it's a much easier just to simply Command Tab or use a third-party tool to navigate between them. I don't think I would use Spaces to manage 64 windows so much as to get my head into this problem of creating a document or laying out a book or editing a photo.
I don't think I work that way, and maybe you don't either, Merlin. I use
Virtu. Let's ride bikes.
Yeah, I use Virtu desktops. I mean, I have it. I paid for it, but I always turn it off because it just doesn't. Well, for one thing, it confuses me because all of a sudden I'm on a different desktop, and it's just, where am I? What am I doing? And I have a 30-inch display. I just have a lot of windows open. That's all.
Yeah.
3,000 plus widgets. Okay. Woohoo.
any more than correct time.
I'll be impressed when there are 3 million.
Well, you know, it was cool the way you could just do a snip right from a web page. That part was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's neat.
Leo, you've become some kind of like a disillusioned Marlena Dietrich kind of character.
I'm so tired. I'm tired of being tired. Another
cigarette holder. Little top hat.
I don't. So Jobs says, I use Dashboard many, many times a day. I'd sure like to know what Jobs. Is it for looking at Dilbert cartoons? What exactly is he using that for many times a day?
Dashboard is lost on me, I got to tell you.
I use Yahoo widgets because they're there all the time. I don't like having to press, you know, F12 to see my dashboard.
Yeah, I mean, the only time I use dashboard widgets is when I can just drag them onto the desktop and use them alongside my regular windows. But the litmus test for me, when I realized that the doc had sort of failed to catch with me, just like the rest of you guys, was when I realized that anytime I need to look up a dictionary word, I'm launching the dictionary app. I'm not going into dashboard. Right.
Hey, let me ask you this. Is there a way? I know there's that way where you can do that secret foo with like command drag close to make it stay. Is there any way that you can drill down to a dashboard widget and have it pop up without going into dashboard? Here's a use case. Here's a use case. Let's say I want to use the stupid dictionary widget instead of going to someplace like, say, Google. Let's say I want that. Is there a way I can, in Quicksilver, pop up, bring up the dictionary widget, I hit it and quit it, and I'm done? Do I have to like go into that little alcove of functionality over in dashboard, or can I just have it come up somewhere and use it? Because that, you know, that would be really cool. I would
see,
use
to
that.
Me, that's why I use Yahoo widgets, because they can live at different layers on the desktop. It just makes sense. They're there.
Well, we're also okay. And I'm going to send my second time of this podcast, I'm going to send a little love to the Windows people, because they're humans. I heard
you like the sidebar.
I love the way the sidebar works in Vista, because there's an option where you can say, look, I want to dedicate this section of my window just to widgets. I want that, because there's some things that I don't want them to be covered up. I want to always be able to check on this eBay thing. I want to always be able to check on the last five things in Engadget. And that's the reason why some of these things are useless to me, because they don't have their own little area where they're not going to be covered up.
I think that was an insight Microsoft had that Apple apparently hasn't yet had, which is that most people have these widescreen displays, and there is real estate on the left and right side.
Yeah, it would be like, to me, it's almost like putting the speedometer on the back of the visor. Like, I want to check my speed, so I'll just flip this down.
Exactly. It's like analogy. That's exactly it.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry. I was just going to say that two or three years ago, I got so frustrated by this that I actually mocked up what that should look like, and I gave it during a keynote. And a year later, that's what's appearing in Vista. It just really chafed my jodhpurs to know that this idea that I'm saying that this idea first appeared on Windows and not on the Macintosh. I'm like, that's not the way that my universe works.
Right.
I'm not supposed to envy Windows users, except for the games.
AACLD in iChat, that might be interesting. If iChat sounds a heck of a lot better, we might switch from Skype to iChat. That'd be kind of interesting. Tabbed chats, photo booth effects. I don't. Ooh, look, I'm in a mirror. iChat theater. I don't know what the hell that would be.
When you go on a Mount Pilot,
And then and backdrops, because frankly, I don't want to look like I'm here in my office in my jammies. I want to look like I'm in the Welt. So, yeah, look, he put Phil Schiller in an aquarium. I thought that was cool.
When he stuck his tongue out through Steve Ballmer's picture, that got the most applause of that part.
Yeah, okay, so I'm seeing Steve Ballmer's picture here. So what did he do?
He made it look like he was sticking his tongue out.
Oh, that's funny. You could do the Clutch Cargo talking thing.
Yeah, but
that would be good. I would do that.
The thing that was potentially interesting about all that was being able to share iPhoto slideshows and keynote presentations over iChat.
Oh, interesting.
And that part definitely got my attention.
Interesting.
Yeah, screen sharing. That's going to be a really big feature, not just in support, but just in all these people who are the tech, who are like, you know, the only person who knows how to get anything working on any computer anywhere in the family.
I'm actually happy to hear about this because iChat seems to me a long neglected app. In fact, I even said that on a Mac Wine a while ago, and I'm glad to see that they're doing something with it because it wasn't keeping up. I moved to Adium. Uh-huh. So maybe it'll be time to move back. It sounds like some good functionality in there.
Yeah, the best feature is that it gives you a feature that's been on other chat clients for a long time, the ability to be invisible but online. So I can see everybody else who's out there, and if I need, oh wait, Merlin, I need to talk to him about something, but no one can chat me, even though I've got my
it's kind
wave.
Of selfish of you, so that you see them, but they can't see you.
I need less technology to commit me to humanity. I need to make this wall thicker. Damn it!
You're like a personality leech.
Exactly. A personality leech.
Hey man, I'm a personality metastasizer. I send my little drones out to inflict, you know,
bots.
bad vibe cancer in other people.
Oh dear.
I like that in Adium. Adium makes it easy to. This might exist in iChat, but Adium has a neat thing with a pull down. You can say I just want to be visible to this group, or I want to just be invisible to these people.
Right. That's how it should be. That's so the most important part of a chat.
Jay Random War Dialer, hey, what's up? You know,
hey. Yeah. I mean, it really is an important feature. I mean, just this morning, that's why I didn't go to bed until like noon today because I was on deadline, like up to the last minute crunch, and I need to have my editors be able to see me and get in touch with me if they need to get a quick chat. And you know, some guy I chatted me like 10:20 saying, "Hi, I got a problem with this OS. Can you help me with that?" Saying, "No, I'm on deadline. It'll only take me 1 second." Like, yeah. But I, you know, your 1 second is not more important than my 1 second. Goodbye. So again, you need to be able to manage your more access is not just more access. More access is your ability to define what versions of the world you're willing to expose yourself to, so to speak. Talk about masking at any one given time.
Time Machine. We've seen this before. That's number 10. He showed. That's going to be good. Windows has it. Useful. Probably very, very, very useful. Maybe even like the most useful feature, but ho-hum. Okay, what else? I'm going through the list. Oh, $129, even in the ultimate version. Here we go. Now one more thing. And now this is where the developers are saying, please, Steve, please open the iPhone, please. And he didn't. Safari was his focus. I don't know why Safari for Windows is something that should... Steve Jobs held off Leopard till October because they were so busy working on the iPhone and Safari for Windows. What's the deal?
I don't buy any of that. I think that they were just working on Leopard and they're using that as a very convenient
All
reason
right.
to say,
that,
you know,
that probably makes sense.
Although that was the item when I was, you know, getting caught up on the coverage. That's the thing that I reread twice because Apple, if you think about Apple creating a third, a multi-platform browser, that's like saying, well, what are they going to do next? Are they going to create their own brand of cola now?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Firefox is there. That doesn't need to be done. What is the advantage
feature?
For Apple? Why does Apple do this?
Well, it's just a slightly orthogonal view of what we've been talking about since January, which is that this is the first time. As I sat there and wept when we first talked about how there might not be third-party apps, we talked about the fact that this is the first time that, you know, a lot of people are going to be holding the Mac OS in their hand. And to be able to have that continuity between what they're doing on their phone versus what they're doing on the desktop seems to me like the thin end of the wedge to get them into an Apple computer.
I could see with iTunes, but a browser is pretty much a browser. Most of the browser experience isn't even from the browser. It's from the site you're on.
Yeah, but I'd like you to think about one thing, though, that kind of made a click with me. Realize that in the same, I think, half-hour span, Steve talked about Apple supporting a new class of web apps that work through Safari browser on the iPhone. And then he said, oh, by the way, we're creating a Safari browser on Windows.
Ah. So do you think that this new class of web apps is something that isn't web standard?
I think this is a way for Apple to subtly start putting their software, making it available to Windows people. I think this is a strategic move, not a tactical move, meaning it's something that they're planning to put infrastructure in place so they can do something really cool next year, as opposed to simply releasing a new browser. Now, as it is, I'm kind of interested in getting my hands on Safari for Windows, because one of the things I really just hate about Firefox is that it doesn't do any color management whatsoever.
Safari is the only browser that does good color management.
Yeah, I mean, I have to strike two different versions of every photo I post onto Flickr, because I have to make sure it looks halfway decent on Firefox, and I can't always do that. Also, it is a lot faster than Firefox. But
it's based on the K browser, so it probably, which is the Linux browser built in KDE, it probably wasn't too hard to port it. It seems an odd thing to do, but now I'm getting it, because when you say it's a strategic idea, the idea is Apple's going to start developing apps that are Safari specific.
Well, yeah, so look at it this way. What's the thing Mr. Alex Lindsay always has finally convinced me of anyway, is that it's not about the iPod, it's about iTunes. And iTunes makes the iPod very powerful. Conceivably, what if Safari becomes the thin end of the wedge for the OS in general?
Right.
I wonder if it isn't a way to start looking at a Google-like approach to applications. Once they get Safari on the Windows machine, they can make their own documents and mail everything.
Speaking as somebody though who is a strong believer in non-proprietary open source, this is just one more proprietary platform. I would much prefer to see Google Gears and Firefox than I want to see Safari and unique apps that only run on Safari. I mean, it's good for Apple. I'm not saying it's not, but I don't think it's good for the ecology.
Well, I don't care.
Do we need a new platform? We've already, Ajax runs on all browsers. Let's do Ajax.
Yeah, but I only care about what I get out of a user. I really don't give a damn about the industry.
Well, you should. I'm not going to make my pitch for that.
How has the industry helped me get my work done in the next 3 hours when I only have too much work to do?
But I
don't care about proprietary standards, so long as the proprietary standard is the best standard and it doesn't put my neck in a vice.
I think that's short-sighted. Now, I agree, if you're on deadline, maybe you need to be short-sighted. But you also need to take the longer view that first of all, we don't need another proprietary platform.
Well, remember that we're all just speculating about this being a proprietary new platform, so let's just be careful about that.
True, but that would be to me, that seems like the only reason you would want to even do this. If the apps that are Safari apps on the iPhone run on Firefox, what's the point?
Well, also, what's the point of having an open standard that no one can individually control? This is one of the things that I think has consistently
held back.
There's
no point for Apple, but there's a lot of point for users.
No. This is one of the big problems that I've always had with open source software. Occasionally, you need someone to take one step back and say, okay, how does my aunt Estelle approach this? How does this look to my aunt Estelle? Ubuntu is wonderful, but if at any point after bring up a command line to get anything to work, you failed. Don't ship it yet.
Right.
And one of the greatest things about Apple is that they have the ability to steer things.
Yes, and the trains run on time.
There's a believe it or not, I did not plan this. I've not met this man before. I've just chosen him at random out of the audience. But I actually happened to cut and paste like a quote from G.K. Chesterton this morning that turns out to be absolutely perfect. He said, "Progress should mean that we are always changing the world to fit the vision. Instead, we are always changing the vision." And I really think that Apple is in the business of saying, "Look, here's this cool thing. We're going to put it out there. Bring your preconceptions to it, but now it's out there. Now you can actually use it and benefit from it." I think that too much of the rest of the world, sometimes open source as well, it's all about, well, here's a limitation. Oh, I know, but if you like Linux, you're going to be able to use this. It'd be better off for you guys, the users, if we made this really cool, insanely good proprietary technology that made things twice as good, but it wouldn't be open then. So I'm sorry. Please be happy with this 1998 style application. That's not good enough for me.
Well, I don't think it is either or. I mean, you can have open applications that are insanely good. I mean, it's just that Apple's not going to make them.
Yeah, I'm just not willing to ding Apple for not making a completely open anything.
Right.
Always make the best solution, no matter what. And
I ding them when they're talking about the web, because that's the problem, is we need web standards. I ding Microsoft for making Internet Explorer not support web standards. We got to support. That's the whole point of the web, is that it's platform agnostic.
Let me ask you this, though. Where did you guys get that this is going to be proprietary in any conceivable way?
Exactly. That's why.
No, you're right. It might not.
We're speculating about Ajax apps that only work on Safari.
What I read in the press release is, once again, I probably am misuse of the word of the phrase Web 2.0, but I don't have it in front of me right now. But the press release on the Apple site said specifically that this is going to be based on Web 2.0 and internet standards.
As long as it's standards based, I'm fine with it.
So I would take that to mean at the same time, the other way to look at this is to go, wow, thanks, Steve. Your big one more thing was that we should use JavaScript to make web pages interactive. That's a great idea. You should get a name for that.
Rollover buttons. Another Apple innovation. By the way, we patented it.
I have an idea that you can electronically send a kind of mail from one Mac to another.
By breaking down information to a system of ones and zeros. We refer to this as Apple Open Binary.
Well, maybe this really is just to appease the developers and say, look, we're going to give you a way to put third-party apps on the iPhone. I mean, isn't that really what this is all about?
I think it was a good compromise because, you know, from one perspective, if they completely opened it up, you'd have all the people going, now it's going to be virus prone. And then, you know, they gave something up. I don't think this is the end of this conversation. I think it's a first step. And remembering that you do allegedly have access to all the iPhone services like dialing and all that kind of stuff. So let's see what comes about.
I hate to be so stuck in the past, but if I were to take an airplane from one city to another, how would I use that application while I'm in the air?
Well, no, and that's one of the things Google Gears does, is it allows you to make these applications survive when you're offline. And I think that that's completely doable.
Leo Laporte, you're saying, setting aside all this kind of, you know, political stuff that's associated with open source stuff, you're saying that there's a rich community of people out here, or a rich community that's putting together all this stuff. Why kind of leave that behind?
Your point is absolutely well taken. They may not be leaving it behind. In fact, it doesn't look like I have no reason to say they won't.
Yeah, Safari is still one of the most standards compliant browsers around.
Absolutely.
So I don't think there's
Absolutely.
Anything to worry about. But again, I just think that I'm excited about the idea of a company saying, well, look, if we can make the user experience better by doing something that's proprietary, as opposed to just giving us a new technology that we can own lock, stock, and barrel, I just don't see that as a bad thing.
And while I poo-pooed initially the idea of keeping third-party apps off, pointing out that, look, one of the strengths of the Palm platform, as an example, is the tens of thousands of great third-party apps. It doesn't compromise you're a trio because it's a Palm, but we're in a new era, and maybe Steve is saying, well, we've got to sandbox these applications. We're going to sandbox them in Safari. We're going to make it as a platform that is every bit as functional and maybe even easier to develop for. Because remember, when you develop a Palm app, you have to learn the Palm API. Well, everybody knows Web 2.0 and Ajax. There's a lot of developers.
Here's one other thing, though. If this thing will work with .Mac and Sync, presumably, right?
If it doesn't, they get a problem, right?
Yeah, all those services are supposed to be available.
Yeah,
I just want to take it a step at a time, though. But so if you have a .Mac account and you've got your contacts and you've got your calendar entries and you got, and maybe let's just say, just for the sake of argument, just for fun, let's say your .Mac web dev stuff, even though I know that's not going to happen. But I guess one way to look at this is Sync takes care of this. So if, as I half understood from watching,
that's how Google Gears works. You'll work in Google Calendar offline. When you get off the plane, it'll sync up.
I'm just trying to come up with something that's plausible for the way that Apple tends to think of
stuff. Totally doable. Totally doable.
So what you do is you go in there and you fiddle around with stuff. You make all your changes.
And
you
then
do
it
what
sinks.
You want. And if indeed these applications do give you some kind of hooks into the services, into address book, into that kind of stuff, you could conceivably go in there, make notes, do whatever, like you would on a Palm, and then that gets synced up next time around. Does that seem like
a
possible way
to? I'd be willing
to
bet that they're going to do that. That's the way.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. Now
I was worried that, you know, with the iPhone release only a couple of weeks away now, that we would stop having to speculate and make wild guesses about what's going to happen.
See?
I'm glad that we've got new fodder for that. I would keep speculating for months and months to come.
We can speculate on new things.
I'd like to point out one other thing. Our careers as pundits are secure.
I would like to point out one other thing, that dashboard widgets and Yahoo widgets both are written in JavaScript and CSS, that they are, in fact, web applications or could be web applications. So if you can do it in a widget, you could probably do it on an iPhone.
Yeah. And this comes back to the point that I was making a few minutes earlier, that you bring up all the tens of thousands of apps that are available for Palm. Most of them are really, really crappy because Palm doesn't exert any I'm serious.
But that's
every
fine.
Time,
they're there, though. I mean,
they're functional,
there.
But they don't drive anything forward.
Some of them are great, though. I mean, and the fact...
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, maybe you have to have 10,000 bad ones to get 1,000 good ones, but you've got 1,000 good ones.
Yeah, but you got to look through the 9,000 bad ones.
Well, I don't think that this necessarily is going to ensure that these will be great apps. There'll be plenty of crappy apps written to run on Safari
absolutely.
On the iPhone.
Well, that's why I actually like the idea of Apple being a gatekeeper for iPhone apps. I want
for
500 frickin' bucks, I want all my apps to be touch sensitive. I want them to work really, really well, really, right. really slickly. I don't want to see someone convert their own like open source terminal based text editor. I don't want to have like VI on my iPhone.
I just want to say hi to John Gruber, who's just joined us by the way via phone. Hey, John.
Hello. How is everybody?
We're very well. And I can everybody hear John?
I can hear him.
All right, so hold on a second. I'll figure out a way to make that possible. All right, now you can hear him. And John,
hello.
And you can hear all of us, yes?
I can.
Right. So we've actually just gone through the list of items announced. You could hear us wrapping up with the kind of letdown announcement that there will be no third-party apps, but there will be.
No, that's, you know, I got to tell you that the consensus here at WWDC is sort of one of being insulted, I think. I think if they had just said, look, you can't, you know, we don't have any API news to announce yet. We do have a good web browser. You can write websites that run great on the iPhone, you know, and you know, we're working on stuff for later. People would have said, all right, that's cool. But, like, the way that they're sort of pitching this as, hey, you can write cool apps for the iPhone, too, they're called websites.
it's seen as patronizing.
Yeah, it just does not go over well to sort of, you know, you know, it's like to call it anything other than a mud pie sandwich. You know, you can't spin developers like that. I've heard like three different people say, "Hey, if it's such a great way to write iPhone software, how come Apple isn't doing it for their apps?"
Yeah, exactly. You were at the OS X State of the Union session. Yes. Just got out of that. Anything to report from that?
Not really, except that it doesn't seem, my big question coming out of the keynote was going to be, is there, you know, if they're calling this the way to write software for the iPhone, you know, a website, are they going to have any kind of help, like, you know, a standard CSS file, standard graphics, you know, to use to make, you know, to simulate the iPhone interface? And the answer seems to be no. There's no mention of it at OS X State of the Union. I mean,
so they didn't give out an SDK or anything like that?
No, no. It seems
did they
like,
demo?
You know,
I'm sorry.
Seems like you're on your own for faking it.
Go ahead, Andy.
I was just going to ask, did they demo an application written using this technology so you can get an idea of what one of these third-party apps would look like?
Yeah, they have like an LDAP lookup thing that they wrote internal to Apple.
I think a former Palm developer wrote that.
So can you, now the real question is, they claim hooks into the iPhone apps. Now, does that LDAP application now suddenly appear in my email app so that I can?
No, it's all through the book. You know, you don't get, there's no extra icons in the home screen.
Okay. So when they say integrates with iPhone services, it's a one-way integration.
Well, and it looks like you can do something with a, like, to place a phone call, you it's like a call, C-A-L-L, colon, then the phone number, URL, okay. And then you click it, and iPhone will you know, read that, you know, I guess like a Skype call to
it's
a URL.
It's a protocol call. Yeah, it's a protocol.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's good. It means you could have an application where, and if...
Well, it's a website.
Well, now, I don't know if you heard, but I was just saying, well, isn't, you know, aren't dashboard applications in JavaScript and CSS? I mean, if you can do a widget, that would give, but you can't get an icon, so that's kind of...
Right, you can't get an icon, and so you can't, you know...
why not? Why can't you get an icon?
Well, I mean, let's see where we are in a year. I mean, like I said, I mean, it would have gone over a lot better if they would have said we have nothing to say about that
right.
yet, but... In the meantime, you can write websites that are optimized for iPhone.
What's your reaction to the Leopard features that they showed, the new Finder interface, Coverflow, Stacks?
You know, this, you know, where's the secret, you know? I mean, apparently the secret interface was, you know, the secrets from last year's WWDC were, you know,
Coverflow.
new window theme and Coverflow in the Finder.
Yeah.
And the thing that cracked me up the most was, you know, it was like, it seemed like Coverflow is the one thing that Jobs was really enthusiastic about in the keynote. And it just cracked me up that he kept calling it very, very useful.
Yeah.
Really, really useful.
That's my reaction to it. I don't understand the value, although I guess some people, including Andy, like it. They're talking about 300 features. Did they give you any more insight into those other, you know, the 290?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, I'm really kind of surprised by how little information so far there is, more than what you would have gleaned from August 2006 WWDC in terms of features.
Right, right. They are handing out, though, a new copy of Leopard, yes?
Yes. Yes.
So presumably...
So I saw people installing it. I don't have it installed yet, but I did see people installing it. And there's somebody... I heard somebody say... I mean, this is, you know, just like overheard conversation, but apparently, you know, there's a lot to talk about in iCal, what's new, and totally got cut out of the keynote, did not make the keynote.
Well, you'd expect that. I mean, he only showed 10 features. How about mail? Anything new there?
No, not a word yet.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Are you going to do a write-up on Daring Fireball? What can we expect in terms of your coverage?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't thought about it yet. I guess something, some kind of, you know, pulse, you know, what's the, you know, the consensus. But it's kind of hard. There's not really a lot of news. I mean, the biggest news isn't for the Mac. The biggest news is for Windows. It's Safari.
What do you think of that?
You know, I've kind of got the scoop on that, talking to somebody, that the ultimate, you know, I kind of have the reason why they did it.
Good. We want to know. Why?
ad money. They get money from...
Oh.
Apple gets money from Google for every search
it's
that goes through the
toolbar.
It's a profit
thing.
And it's so much money that, you know, they figure, you know, what's the... If they've got, you know, 5 million... users now, or 5% of the market now, they're going to at least go to 10%, right? I mean, at least double.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's like apparently...
No,
like
it makes a lot of sense. It makes Mozilla Foundation a ton of money.
Right.
That little Google search there.
Yeah, so figure if they're making, let's just say, you know, $10, $20 million a year right now in ad money, you know, they're thinking that can go to 100, 150,
makes
200 million
sense.
A year.
Makes perfect sense, yeah.
And then secondarily, all sorts of nice things fall out of it where, yes, if more websites ship with totally top-notch Safari support for Ajax apps on
that's
day one.
Right.
You know, that's good news for everybody.
I just would like to announce the new Twit browser that will have a built-in Google search bar. Everybody should be downloading that right now. It might look familiar, might look a little like Safari, but trust me, it's the Twit browser.
Leo, I went ahead and downloaded that, and I've made a Lynx-compatible version of that. Should be able to run on most text-based devices.
Much faster that way. And by the way, more secure.
2.0 service that allows people to just send me money in a box.
Well, damn you!
No credit, no credit card fees, no muss, no fuss.
Once again, you've topped us all!
It's all about the user experience for me.
John,
Where are you going to go tonight, John? You going to a party tonight?
Yeah, I guess I'm gonna go to the WebKit party. I mean, all of a sudden that seems a lot more. It seemed like a good party to go to, but
WebKit's the place to be now, baby.
Yeah, it sounds like a.
You can drown your sorrows.
Well, my big question, you know, at a technical nerdy WWDC level is, how exactly are they doing this for Windows? Is it something that they're borrowing from, you know, iTunes, some sort of carbonish type framework, or is it some sort of, you know, if it really is Safari on Windows, is it some sort of, you know, Cocoa for Windows thing?
Well, as I understand, the WebKit is basically based on the K browser, right?
The WebKit, yeah, but what about the app itself?
You'd have UI on top of it. I bet you Apple has some decent Windows developers. How do they do iTunes? Is that not a native Windows app?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, but it's, you know, it's like a carbonish sort of C++ application.
Oh, there's a kind of an interface level?
Right. I mean, that's why iTunes is not, I mean, you know, iTunes, the whole UI is so custom anyway. Who knows? You know, it doesn't really matter. But it's, you know, technically, if you really want to pick it apart and dissect it, it's a carbon application.
Right. Well, I'm downloading Safari 3 right now for Windows, and I'll be using it full-time because I think Apple needs more of my money. Actually, it's not my money. It's Google's money. Go ahead. Use it.
Well, yeah, and the other thing they've done is they have made it an option that you can do a Yahoo search through.
Sure. I'm sure Yahoo pays affiliate fees, too.
Well, I can only presume they added it because they've got them bidding off, you know, playing off each other.
I noticed Flock's default is Yahoo, so clearly there is money to be made. John, we really thank you for calling in. I know you'd probably like to get on to the Developer Tools State of the Union.
I could do that.
We won't keep you.
All right.
Thanks so much. John Gruber is the creator, author of Daring Fireball, daringfireball.net. Great, great Apple blog. Everybody must read.
Nice to talk to you.
And we'll take care. We'll talk to you again soon. We'll get you on Mac Break Weekly soon.
Thanks.
Thanks, John. See ya. In fact, we're going to wrap this up unless anybody has anything else to say. I don't think we need to do our special... picks because I think in the interest of getting this thing out, it's already long enough. I'd like to get it out the door so that people can get our thoughts on what happened today at WWDC. Is that okay with you?
Cool with me.
All right. We'll save our picks for next week. Hey, I want to thank you, Andy Inako, for joining us from the Dunce Cap Studio A.
Always nice here at the top of the Smokehouse Ballroom.
Gets a little smoky, but boy, is that food good.
Great band.
Chicago Sun-Times to read Andy's work, and of course online at the Colossal Waste of Bandwidth at CWOB.com. Scott Bourne is doing the Apple Phone Show. You must have one coming out this week to announce all of these new exciting developments.
Yeah, we're going to be out there Thursday. Andy's usually on the show with me, and we'll jaw about this a little bit more. And one of the things we're going to talk about is the 6 p.m. release time. That's one of the things we're going to hit.
We're going to I've already talked to Kevin Rose, and he is going to do a dignation from the Palo Alto Apple Store on June 29th. And they're going to wait in line, and I'm going to go down there, and we might do a little twit down there. Right before 6 p.m. So if anybody wants to join me down at the Palo, or should we do our own at the Apple Store in San Francisco? Maybe that's
I vote San Francisco.
It's local. Yeah, I don't know why they're doing it in Palo Alto. I just thought we could synergize on the vast Twit audience, and he is going to have dancing girls. So
I can get us dancing girls.
Oh. Okay, I think I'm going to call this show I Can Get Us Dancing Girls, actually. And maybe Steve Jobs should have talked to you before he went on stage. That is applephoneshow.com. And I will let you know about our what we plan to do. But we will be somewhere at 6 p.m. on June 29th. Probably streaming live via Stick.
As will we all.
God willing, I want to point out.
I just had a peanut butter sandwich with bacon, so maybe not you.
Remember Elvis. Little mayonnaise and banana on there, and that's a killer. Merlin Mann is a host of The Merlin Show at themerlinshow.com, and of course 43 Folders, and a regular on many of these fine podcasts. And I'm going to let you want to plug your little thing you're doing? What is OmniFocus?
I should plug my little thing.
Plug your little thing.
if you are attending.
My favorite Muddy Waters song of all, plugging my little thing.
I got to plug my little thing.
Hang on just one second.
OmniFocus is something he's working on as an unpaid consultant, I might say, with the Omni Group.
I'm going to plug my little thing. The thing I'm going to plug.
The thing.
So I walk in for Apple. Well, you know, if you're at the WDC on a Wednesday night, you can see me demo OmniFocus at the Westin Hotel.
Yeah. Damn. The Plug My Little Things Blues.
Yeah, so anyway, I'm going to be at me and let's see who else is going to be there. It's the Omni Group folks and Ethan from Kinkless.
Schoonover?
Yes. Ethan Schoonover and me. And we're going to just have a little kind of birds of a feather off-site hangout deal and talk about OmniFocus, demo the latest.
Is OmniFocus based on Kinkless? What is it?
You know, this is a disclosure. I work on this
for free. I don't think you have to disclose it when you work for free.
Okay, fine. I don't disclose it.
He's not getting any money from this guy. So what the hell? I mean, you know, if you're getting money, I want to know about it. But if you're stupid enough to work for him for free, you really don't have to tell anybody.
It's so adorable. We're pretending that we have ethical standards here. I love this.
We do. We do have ethical standards.
Exactly. Keep saying that. That makes even better.
We do.
So Kinkless is an Apple script for Omni. God, this is going to make the show drag longer. It's an Apple script for Omni Outliner that this guy Ethan developed that makes it easy to implement a getting things done like action management system.
That's very cool.
Yeah, and it actually ended up, well, let's be honest, it ended up selling so many copies of Omni.
I bought the Pro because you have to have the Pro. So I bought the Pro.
Right.
I upgraded.
That's right. Yeah, and so they were cool enough to say, hey, why don't you guys help us make this into a full-on app? And so we've been working with them for the last few months on,
cool.
As I said, I mostly sit in a lawn chair with the beer pointing and, you know, grunting.
Well, come on, you're going to get a cut of sales or something.
I don't know.
They got to give you stock. They got to help you somehow.
They paid my expenses for like a trip there and stuff. But I mean, I'm not. But anyhow, it's a really neat application, and when I say OmniFocus, you're either going to be like really into it or really clueless. It's already got like a huge kind of cult following.
Is it out?
They're rolling people into a sneaky peek beta a little at a time right now. But it's pretty mature. It's looking good for alpha.
Anyway,
but a lot of people haven't had a chance to see it, you know, really working in the wild. And given that it's in beta, there's new stuff rolling out every couple days. So it should be pretty fun. And I'll be around throughout the week. I couldn't score a pass, so I'm not going to be at the actual show, but I might come to some of the parties.
Cool.
So I'll be around. That's 6:15 on Wednesday night at the Commonwealth Room at the Westin Hotel. There's more information on 43folders.com.
Hey, before we wrap things up, a quick reminder that this show brought to you by, as always, audible.com. I have a great book for you this week. Our MacBreak Weekly pick is a book I just finished that I love from Stephen Levy, who is one of the best computer writers out there. He wrote the original Hackers, the history of hacking, the MIT hackers. His most recent book, I think it's his most recent, is called The Perfect Thing. I've talked about it on the show a couple of times. It's a kind of a story of the iPod, inside and out, its cultural significance, how it was designed, and a whole lot more. It's an excellent book, and it's just one of thousands of books you can get for free from audible.com when you use our special website, audible.com/MacBreakWeekly. Lots of great books there. I don't know if you've listened to books before, Audible books before, but it is a fantastic way to supplement your podcasts. These books are entertaining. They're well-read. I've been a member for years, and I tell everybody I know about Audible. Our book of the week, again, The Perfect Thing, How the iPod Shuffles Commerce, Culture, and Coolness by Stephen Levy, read by Anthony Rapp. It's available for free if you go to audible.com/MacBreakWeekly. And make sure you take a look at Audible while you're there, because there's some great features. My Next Listen, which I use all the time whenever I hear about a book like this that I want to read. I just add it to my Next Listen list, and I get it automatically when the new month comes. They've got subscriptions that allow you to affordably get a number of books a month. There's a whole lot more. And we'll be giving you some great tips, some great books from Audible as the weeks go by. Audible.com/MacBreakWeekly. We thank them for their support. So I want to encourage you all to come up with a book of the week, because we're going to do a book of the week every week. And whoever gets the best book wins a big prize.
And for them.
And the blues guitar stylings.
I dibs the Holy Bible. I win.
But do they have God reading it? That's the question.
Adrian Zemed from Hooker.
Yeah, Charlton Heston. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
All right. Another Mac break is broke.